god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Except not, because it's an atheist show. We have a thing to announce. We have an important thing to announce. Once again, I'm kind of a jerk about everything I do. And I've been calling somebody by the wrong name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we need to correct that. Roz.
Ho-ho.
Hey! How are you, Roz?
I'm monosyllabic. How are you?
Welcome to the monosyllabic club, because also joining me is Dave.
I'm just thinking I'm so proud of you for finally fully accepting your true fandom of Frasier.
Oh, right. Roz Doyle. Yeah, how about we never speak of that again?
And I'm Sam, and this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. That's our voicemail number. We are on, this is a pre-recorded episode, but there's a really, really, wow interview in the second segment. Oh, I'm so looking forward to it. Like, I don't know what's on it already.
Yeah.
So, Dave, you got a chip on your shoulder about eight different things today, don't you?
I have all sorts of things going on. Okay, so I got in a conversation, and, you know, we've all done this, and we usually regret it, but I got in a conversation with my uncle, who is a global warming denier. And strangely enough, we had this actually very good interaction, this back and forth, this exchanging of articles. There was no name calling. It was very respectful. It's not something that happens on the internet very often. In fact, I think you can technically get kicked off of Reddit for being reasonable, but
Reddit's a dark art, man. Yeah. I try to say something and then I find out I committed a war crime and the Hague is coming to get me.
This was Facebook that you were talking about.
Yes,
right?
Okay. We were on Facebook and I was basically, you know, we started talking about, you know, peer review and the importance of it. And he sent me this blog of this guy who's claiming that NOAA is manipulating the numbers to increase the fear of global warming to increase their own funding. And I'm like, you know, I think if anyone has a monetary interest, it's the oil companies, not the scientists. Anyway, back and forth. But as we were having this discussion, I had a realization. And this is probably not an original thought. I've never heard it framed this way. And so I wanted to share it with everyone.
Okay.
So Pascal's wager. Hit the button.
Pascal's wager assumes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sam.
No problem.
So Pascal's wager is stupid. It's a stupid argument in the form, or when it comes to religion, there are so many arguments against it. There's so many reasons it doesn't work. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
But I realized Pascal's wager actually may work for global warming. Because if you look at it, there are two possibilities. Either global warming is happening or it's not. Now, if you don't believe that global warming is happening and you're right, okay, we are at status quo. Nothing changes. If you are wrong, our planet is going into a spiral that is just going to kill us all and destroy most of the planet, and there will be no humans left.
Okay.
Okay. If you do believe that global warming is happening, if you are right, then we can do something. We can take steps to change the way we do things to ameliorate the effects of global warming. Mm. If you're wrong, well, we're still moving away from an oil-based economy, which is a limited thing. Like, there is only so much oil in the world. If we burn up all the oil, even if global warming is not happening, we're still going to have an economic collapse because we've built our entire economy on oil products.
Right.
So the way I see it is, if you don't believe in global warming, the best case scenario is status quo. And if you do believe in global warming, the worst case scenario is we just make the world a better place anyway. So.
Okay.
Whew, how do I unpack that one? If I may.
Yeah.
The first thing first is that I'm going to go in order of increasing importance to the argument, I think. But the first one is the people who are not advocates of global warming, the global warming deniers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about the researchers who think global warming is caused by somebody else. I'm talking about the people who go to WhatsApp with that or something like that.
Right.
They believe that the climate change, the whole climate change thing is a hoax so that scientists get money and scientists want to destroy the economy. They don't see it as a zero sum if we do climate change. They see it as a negative sum. Now, I don't know anybody who's sane, who's saying we have to start diversifying away from oil. Like, even like business is saying that now, where they weren't saying that 30 years ago.
Right.
Because the oil's expensive and the technology has improved and there are better ways to do it now. It's just we have this infrastructure that's sort of hanging around our neck. And if there's anything we're kind of crap at, it's infrastructure. See, I'm an American. I can't even say it. And then the other thing is, I think the minute you start, I think Pascal's wager is a wager you can only make when you already believe.
You think so?
Yeah. And I think that's the moment when you go from critical to uncritical is when you say, well, what's the point? Like that would be my take on it is, nothing bad happens. I mean, effectively, you're right. I mean, if we get rid of fossil fuel burning, if we get rid of, if we implement all these other technologies, we're a step closer to a post-scarcity society, which is something I like, because we have the potential for a much greater energy budget than we currently have. But that's just going to, the way Arthur C. Clarke said it, is that's just going to lead us to the next crisis, which will be the thermal crisis. Right now, we're putting out CO2, and the CO2 traps heat.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when we become such an energy fat civilization that the problem is the heat we generate? And I just love that idea. Well, I don't love the idea. I just think that's getting to that point would be kind of terrifying, because what kind of technology, what kind of society would we be?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just kind of where I'm at with it. Ruslan?
Well, the first thing when I hear the argument about the global warming stuff is there a big difference between Pascal's wager and the precautionary principle? And I definitely would say yes, because you think of the idea of Pascal's wager being kind of an exclusive argument of the existence of God. And the precautionary principle is used for kind of legitimate, you know, hey, there will most likely be a natural disaster pertaining to X in a given number of years. We should probably prepare for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it deals with the objective being more likely. I honestly don't think it's going to be all that likely that there's a God, so the Pascal's wager doesn't work for me, and I really don't think it would be a precautionary principle thing to worry about the existence of God, just as I'm sure the U.S. government doesn't worry about aliens landing and wanting to make a cookbook, like in The Twilight Zone. So they're planning for likely contingencies, and I think in that case, global warming and the precautionary principle is a useful one. I think the important thing here would be to differentiate doing something as a precaution and doing something just for, hey, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
So just for a moment, pretend I'm stupid. It shouldn't be hard.
yeah. Really, man?
But precautionary principle. Explain this in a little more detail.
Okay. So I'm going to preface myself by saying I'm a little dumb too, and I don't have an entire grasp of it, but
we're not exactly the smart party is what you're saying.
No way, we're totally the smart party. This is why we're on the radio. People listen to us.
I'm not here looking for trouble.
no, I'm not going to finish that reference. So my understanding of the precautionary principle is that it's better to plan for contingencies upon the possibility of their happening, and that there will be a likely forecast of it.
Okay.
So, like, we live in an area where earthquakes are very likely. There's been a precedent of earthquakes in the past, and therefore it's good for us to build infrastructure.
And New Yorker. And New Yorker articles that tell us that we're all going to die.
Yeah.
The Pacific Northwest is just going to fall into the ocean.
But, yeah.
There's a precedent of it happening, and therefore it's easier for us to go, okay, well, we should plan a contingency for it.
Right.
That's what the precautionary principle is. Now, my understanding is not necessarily just precedents either, significant evidence pointing to where it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never had a huge tsunami in, you know, human memory that we know of, or recorded history in this area.
What qualifies as a huge tsunami?
I think Japan, March 2011.
All right.
I mean, we had a small one, but
yeah.
So planning for that sort of likelihood, having tsunami drills and alarms and that sort of thing, you are abiding by the precautionary principle by doing those things. But it's not like going, well, it might happen, because by that logic, the precautionary principle would have us preparing for things like mole men.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So just to get back to the original.
What's wrong with mole men?
Nah, well said.
What is the state government doing about mole men?
where Where is the mole book? It's the mole skin book.
So does that mean our elementary schools will have like mole men drills?
I hope so.
I'm yeah. sorry.
Go ahead. You know what? I got to say this just because I find it's kind of amusing. Is what we do here in case of tsunami is don't go nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay where you are.
Okay.
If you can run up a hill. But yeah,
I'm on the top of the hill already.
Mostly stay where you are.
Quite literally live on hilltops.
Yeah, so. It doesn't really get more up.
I lived in an area before that was only like 10 feet above sea level, and I was right on the sea, and their warning was basically like, try to go to the school, otherwise say goodbye.
Try not to die.
Good luck. You have a surfboard, right? Get some water wings.
I've seen Point Break. Okay, so I want to get back to the original idea of using Pascal's wager as an argument, and I think you both have very good points about this, but where I think that this could be effective is if you're talking to somebody who is religious and is already accustomed to leaning on Pascal's wager because they're not willing to look at the weaknesses of that argument. If you could then take Pascal's wager and turn it around and say, okay, if you accept this, then here, apply it to this situation, you might actually start convincing some people, which I think is the key.
I don't believe in convincing people.
That's why you're on the radio?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't change minds. Are you kidding?
I mean, there's always the idea of confirmation bias, too. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it would, and I don't mean to, you know, dog on your idea, but I like the idea that if you say, hey, think of you planning for that contingency anyway, but there's also the fact that those people will probably always try to find some excuse to weasel their way out of agreeing with you a lot of the time, so.
And in this specific case, I brought this up to my uncle, and I framed it as, this is kind of a new idea, I'm kind of bouncing around. Mm-hmm. If you have a good criticism of this idea, tell me. And so I explained the idea to him, and he basically came back with, you know, I'm too cynical to accept this, which to me is one of those things you say when an argument actually is getting in your head and you can't counteract it, but you're not ready to admit it's right.
Is your uncle religious?
He is.
I'm too skeptical or to admit... What religion is he?
I think he's non-denominational.
So some flavor of Christianity?
Church of God, evangelical.
Okay, I'm too skeptical to admit to believe in the evidence of climate change, but I do believe that 2,000 years ago, this homeless guy died and transmogrified himself to 50 different places and now is God and will read about me out of the Book of Dianetics when I die.
Okay. That's me being the choir you're preaching to.
Okay. So, this is not me saying that stinks. I don't get it. Somebody tell me how this works.
I know.
See, I'm gonna be nice and be a little, I'm gonna defend your uncle a little bit, because on the one hand, he's not pulling some sort of big gross argument to go, I win. He was kind of going, look, I'm too cynical for this. And that almost feels like him kind of conceding a point to you.
And that's the thing. I expect, like, maybe 6 months, a year down the road, I'm going to start seeing him posting being convinced of the other side. Because this is an idea that I put in his head that needs to marinate.
It's an interesting coincidence that admitting your own cynicism betrays a sense of open-mindedness.
Isn't that weird?
I think, is it not cynic? Is it cynicism or is it I'm too, like, there's sort of a culture involved with that sort of group, especially if he's religious. Is it I don't really want to leave this perimeter?
Yeah, he's religious and from a very conservative part of the country.
Yeah.
Where to change his mind is going to have social impacts on his life.
And I can understand that.
Right. So. Yeah.
And admitting that he, in a tangential sort of way, that he has a perimeter that he knows he doesn't want to step out of.
Which goes to my second, third, actually, potential criticism here.
Okay.
It has sort of a lie to children feel to it, and it feels a little bit patronizing. And I don't think we need to do it when the evidence is so overwhelmingly on our side. We don't have to say make-believe stuff, because the thing about Pascal's wager is, the reason he makes the wager is because it's otherwise unknowable.
Right.
And in the case of global warming or anthropogenic climate change, if I'm not going to be a jerk.
You're going to get emails for that.
I know.
Should we just rattle off a list of offensive things and get all the emails we want?
Yeah, geez. Anyway.
Okay.
Wait. I couldn't care less.
I couldn't care less. Oh.
Irregardless of that.
Oh.
Yeah. Where the heck was I? Thanks for.
I believe that was Pascal's.
Pascal's wager was patronizing ants.
Well, no. Pascal's wager wasn't as patronizing because it was specifically about an unknowable question.
Right.
And that's not something controversial to say on the show. Where, you know, we don't know that God doesn't exist. We're just pretty sure.
But there's actual solid.
Yeah.
You know.
And the thing is if he's got sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge awareness that he's in sort of this social perimeter that has consequences, it suggests he's a little bit smarter than what he's saying.
Well, and that's one thing I will definitely give him credit for. Pardon me if I sound arrogant, but my family does. I don't come from a family of idiots. Like, everyone in my family is incredibly intelligent.
Lucky knob.
So.
Yeah.
Speaking of idiots.
Well, I was playing the banjo the other day with my family. And we believe that climate change is real.
Okay.
Did the banjo kill the conversation?
I think it might have,
yes. Did it help if they were playing the banjo with their feet? I don't know.
Is that the El Kabong moment where the banjo killed the conversation?
Were their feet, like, where were their feet? Were they actually on their end of their legs, or were they mole people? I mean,
we're back to the mole people.
Hey. Yeah, well, okay, so we need to move on. We really do, because this is supposed to be an 8-minute segment, and we're on minute 15.
Oh, nice.
We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Lloyd Evans. He runs a website for ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. He's involved with the, hey, Jehovah's Witnesses, you know... There's
the Reddit
Stop
billboard.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an incredibly informative interview, and I'm looking forward to playing it for you. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. We're going to head into a break when we come back. Said awesome interview.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. Joining us now is Lloyd Evans. He's a former Jehovah's Witness elder who is now a writer and activist against the Watchtower Society, the organizational hierarchy behind the Witnesses. For 3 years, he has been involved in the XJW community as editor of jwsurvey.org. He has a YouTube channel under his former pseudonym John Cedars, and he assists the XJW Reddit community with implementing their ideas for activism. How you doing today, Lloyd?
I'm absolutely great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. It's good to have you, too. So you're part of a group of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses on Reddit who put together a billboard near Texas for a Jehovah's Witness convention. Tell us a bit about this project and how you got involved with it.
Thank you. Yeah, well, the good thing about Reddit is that it's obviously a fantastic forum for people to come forward with ideas to change things, and being an activist, I'm all about that. So a bunch of guys on Reddit came forward in the XJW subreddit and said, wouldn't it be a fantastic idea if we had a billboard at one of the next conventions of Jehovah's Witnesses that quite clearly and explicitly mentioned some of the problems with Jehovah's Witnesses, specifically to do with child abuse, which, you know, many of you will know is a very much a hot topic with Jehovah's Witnesses at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so one of the problems that the group was having was that they didn't have a landing page. So in other words, if they did one of these billboards, where would they direct people to? And I already run JW you survey. So I said, well, listen, if you want, I can create an entire page separate on JW Survey with all details about child abuse so that people can just read purely on that topic. And so I created the landing page for them and very proud to be part of that project.
Oh, nice. That's I was actually going to ask if who was behind, because the page is jwawake.com on the billboard, right? And that goes,
yeah, that's right.
And that's your website?
Well, the JW Awake was purchased as a domain, and it just redirects to my website. So my only involvement really has been to create the landing page, but I'm very proud to be part of the project because it's basically been paid for by ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. They ran an internet funding campaign. I forget precisely which website they used for the funding, but they got together around $4,000 to finance the advertising, the billboard expenses.
That's pretty good.
So I'm pleased to do my part just to get the message across.
So we should probably do a bit of radio theater here. And can you describe to us what the sign actually looks like?
Oh, well, it's quite a well-designed sign. It has a picture of a young girl appearing to be gagged with tape, and the message essentially reads, I forget the exact wording, but it says, if there was a pedophile in your Kingdom Hall being where Jehovah's Witnesses congregate, would your elders let you know about it? Or wording to that effect.
Right.
And then it has exactly the same message in Spanish, because obviously this is in Texas, where there's a big Hispanic community. Mm-hmm. And then it obviously has our website address. So it's extremely to the point, because obviously witness regulations at the moment make it extremely difficult for elders to let congregants know if there's a pedophile among them.
Right.
Huh. Okay. Well, I noticed that you went specifically with the topic of child sex abuse. I was wondering, was it always your intention to speak about sexual abuse specifically, or were there other issues in the Jehovah's Witnesses community you were considering to do a billboard about or do more sort of outreach with?
I'm definitely open to doing issues about the other hot topics. I'm personally affected by shunning. I have a father who is a JW and a sister who is a JW, both of whom are shunning me personally. Mm. My 14-month-old baby daughter hasn't seen her granddad yet because he's shunning her family, her parents. There's also the blood issue, the fact that, if witness parents take their child to hospital and it's deemed that he or she needs a blood transfusion, that they'd sooner see he or she die than let her have a blood transfusion. There's also the issue of higher education, the fact that that's stigmatized. There's also the fact of domestic violence, the fact that that isn't properly addressed by Watchtower. There's a number of issues we could do things on, but I feel child abuse is really the hot topic, and especially when you look at the Royal Commission that's just so conveniently going on in Australia just as we speak.
Right.
You know, it's really the issue to headline on.
Okay. So, I mean, it obviously sounds like it's a horrible way to say it because it's such a sad topic, but I mean, a hot button issue to bring up during the convention. Do you think that having another billboard, for example, about like shunning or blood transfusions would have had the same punch if you did it around the same time?
I very much doubt it. That's not to say we wouldn't do that. To be honest, this hasn't really been done before, to my knowledge. I mean, I'm relatively new to activism. I've been doing it, as you say, for only the last 3 years, and it's only now that the XJW community is really starting to kind of find its feet and realize the full spectrum of potential that is open to it, thanks to the new, you know, age of information that we have now, and the fact that, you know, you can bring together these people, these disparate ex-members of cults, and they can do really meaningful things when they join resources. And so we're only kind of really now finding our feet, and this is very much a prototype. But judging by, you know, the increase in web traffic, because I'm monitoring the web traffic, I don't have the exact statistics, but I think even before the convention started, there's been an increase, and a notable increase in traffic to the landing page for child abuse. So it's very encouraging to see where this is going.
Yeah, and I was actually going to ask you about what kind of traffic increase you've seen, because I know that not only is a billboard up there, and then you get the convention, because you chose Texas because there are conventions there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie. Probably the precise location had more to do with, you know, with the geography of who was suggesting it.
Well, okay.
But the great thing about the Texas billboard, the convention location is actually only accessible by a particular highway. So there's no way. I mean, for example, if I was a JW attending this convention, I would expect there to be some kind of announcement not to travel on this particular road.
Right.
That's the kind of preventative measures I would expect from Jehovah's Witnesses, but they cannot issue that because it's such a crucial route to get to the convention. So I think strategically we've picked a very strong point, and hopefully if it's successful, we still don't fully know the results from the web traffic, but if it's successful, we'll definitely be rolling it out on a bigger scale next year, hopefully.
So the regional Jehovah's Witnesses meeting happens here in Tacoma, Washington, where we're based. And I've never really been, I really don't know what these things are for, who goes to them. As far as the Jehovah's Witnesses are concerned, what's the people at this convention, like what is the audience of the people who are going to see this sign?
Okay, well, basically the way Jehovah's Witnesses are organized is that they have a few hundred thousand congregations dotted throughout the earth. I forget precisely how many there are in the United States, but those congregations are organized into what's called circuits. And these circuits are basically administered by a Watchtower representative called the Circuit Overseer. And the circuits are themselves administered into a larger region that's called that used to be called a district. It's now referred to as a region, and these conventions that you have are called regional conventions. So you have multiple circuits attending a convention, each of which are comprised of a number of congregations that can number into, I would say, usually on average 100 Jehovah's Witnesses. So you have around 10,000 Jehovah's Witnesses attending each of these conventions.
Yeah, that's some pretty intense numbers. So yeah. You mentioned the traffic had gone up, and I was like, not only has the is there the traffic on the billboard, but I know I learned the story reading it from like atheist blogs, and I'm sure other news stories pick this story up. What kind of reaction have you gotten so far? Have you, you know, been reached out to? Has the Reddit group gotten any comments or reactions?
Well, the thing I always look out for is because obviously I run an XJW website, which is critical of Watchtower. Mm-hmm. And I'm always fascinated when I see comments coming in from believing Jehovah's Witnesses who are condemning us all and telling us that we're going to be destroyed at Armageddon for saying that we don't agree with seven guys in New York. But the interesting thing is that if you scroll down the comments on the landing page, you are already seeing comments from quite clearly believing Jehovah's Witnesses, which indicates that it's already doing its job, which I find very encouraging. If you can bring in a fully believing, card-carrying, devout Jehovah's Witness who's going to condemn us all and tell us that we're going to go to Armageddon for criticizing the governing body, then we're certainly going to be bringing in people who are already wavering and perhaps realizing that this isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Mm-hmm. So I've talked to a number of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses on the show at this point, and every time we talk about where they go and how they talk to other ex-Witnesses, they do talk about the websites and the forums. Did the internet really, I mean, was the internet the thing that sort of enabled this activism to occur? Or did this activism, has this activism just sort of always been around and we couldn't see it?
I genuinely believe that Google has been a complete game changer in this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, I'm a bit of a geek to Watchtower history, and I'm learning more and more about kind of the resistance movement, the early efforts in the, let's say, the 80s to kind of garner some kind of some kind of movement against the hierarchy. And we have leading figures such as Ray Franz, who wrote a seminal book called Crisis of Conscience, which I refer all Jehovah's Witnesses to. All current and former Jehovah's Witnesses need to read that book because it's by a former governing body member. And in a completely non-bitter and non-angry way, he outlines from his experience in the upper echelons of the organization precisely why, you know, it's just another human religion, another human organization. But, you know, really when you think about the, you know, the 80s and 90s, particularly the early 90s, there was no internet. There was no way for former members to kind of really get together and join forces. Now we're seeing that on a much greater scale. And also, I obviously keep a keen eye on web traffic on my website. I've actually done a video on my YouTube channel about notable cases where I've seen a surge in visits that can only be attributed to Jehovah's Witnesses visiting, because it's something I've written about, something that's happened in the Jehovah's Witness world that they would be aware of and that they've gone straight to Google for. Mm-hmm. And only recently we've had there's a young couple who've gone on YouTube and started making videos, and they directly attribute my website JW Survey to their awakening. And the fascinating thing is that they describe the exact dynamic that I've talked about, where they've gone on Google. I think they were believing witnesses and they went on holiday somewhere, and one of the local elders said, when you get back home, there's a huge development that you'll hear about, and it's really exciting. And they were so intrigued and inquisitive to find out what it was that they went straight on Google and Googled this development. And my website was one of the first things that came up. So they kind of heard my spin on it before they heard Watchtower's spin on it. And this happened, this precise scenario happened maybe two or three times for them, they describe in their video.
Oh, wow. That's kind of validating. And,
yeah.
Exactly. It was extremely comforting to see in like a first-hand testimony, because I've seen the statistics on my web traffic, this huge kind of tidal wave come in whenever there's a story I've covered that Jehovah's Witnesses would be aware of. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to finally see on YouTube first-hand testimony, yes, we were part of that tidal wave, we were among those statistics, and we've woken up thanks to seeing a critical perspective on Watchtower developments. Mm-hmm.
So we've mentioned JW Survey a couple times now, and so it is the website that people land on when they take the URL from this billboard. What does it do in its normal job? What do you index, I suppose?
Well, I set it up in 2011. It's actually amazing, really. I think a real testimony to the humanism that is available once you leave a cult, because I was participating on a forum, on an XJW forum, and I said, wouldn't it be a great idea? And I'd only just woken up myself, and this was in 2011. I said, wouldn't it be a great idea if we could somehow collate all of our experiences and kind of survey people to find out what their perspectives are on Watchtower and whether they agree with the teachings or not. And, you know, there was kind of a mixed reaction, especially when I started suggesting that maybe we finance this, you know, using one of the professional survey websites. And I had an email come through. Sorry, it wasn't an email. It was a message on the forum, a private message. And it was from John Hoyle. I don't mind naming him. He's a really important figure in my life. And basically, he was a webmaster for a number of XJW websites. And he said, and bear in mind, I was fairly new on the scene then. I didn't really know anyone. He said, listen, if you want to start a survey website, I will build it for you. And I don't ask anything in return.
Oh, wow.
I'll make you the website and we'll get the statistics. So I thought, well, you know, there's nothing to lose here. I don't know this guy, you know. It's worth a shot. So I kind of, you know, jumped at his opportunity, and it's basically he built the website, and before long I started blogging on it, and I was obviously blogging about current affair information, and it's basically gone from strength to strength. We had about 1,000 people take our first survey in 2011, and last year's survey, 2014, we had over 5,000.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So it's really solid growth.
That's wonderful.
It's really yeah, it's really expanding, probably more than I can deal with.
Well, that kind of takes me to another thing. Yeah. It sounds like with how popular the website has been, and then in addition to that, the newest thing with the billboard, has the Watchtower Society released any sort of statement, or have you had any official response from them about either JW Survey or the billboard?
Well, Watchtower's official PR response to anything, I've written about this in a recent post I made on JW Survey. I call it 10 Reasons Why I Think Watchtower is Imploding. And one of the issues I raise is that Watchtower's PR strategy is effectively to bury its head in the sand. It will either outright deny that it's doing something wrong, or it will completely ignore any critical voices against it, including JW Survey. So I would be very, very surprised if I ever heard, for example, in a convention talk, one of the governing body members say, whatever you do, don't visit JW Survey, because they know full well the first thing Jehovah's Witnesses do when they get home.
Don't think of an elephant, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's easier for them. It's easier for them if they don't name my website.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier, we kind of touched upon the story about the investigation in Australia and how sort of huge this is getting. You want to talk a little bit about that story and sort of what have you heard and what do you know from an insider perspective about what's going on down there?
Well, this is a really refreshing development, and frankly, it's more than I can deal with at the moment. As it happens, this has coincided with me kind of traveling to Europe and visiting some ex-JW friends and going to various events. So I feel kind of wrong-footed by things because it's come at precisely the time when I can't give it the attention I need to give it. But it's really, really encouraging. I've actually been kind of at home today. I've been quite ill, so I thought it would be a good time to sit down and watch a full day of the proceedings. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely amazed at the level of knowledge that the senior counsel at the Royal Commission, Angus Stewart, had about Jehovah's Witnesses. He's clearly done his research. He knows the organization inside out. And in day four of the proceedings, he is grilling a lady called Monica Applewhite, who Dr. Monica Applewhite, who was employed by Watchtower basically to defend them in the Royal Commission. And he grills Monica for the proceedings and completely pulls her report apart bit by bit, to the point where she's being kind of cross-examined by the Judge McClellan, Peter McClellan, who's basically running the commission. And she ends up agreeing with Judge McClellan that Watchtower's child abuse policies are woefully inadequate. And then the amazing thing is that later on, she's also cross-examined by Watchtower's lawyer, who, and obviously Watchtower had paid her to come to the Royal Commission and defend them. And all the Watchtower lawyer can do is ask her if she'd be willing to kind of improve on her reports and basically do a better job further down the line. Honestly, I was sat in my armchair watching it earlier today and really enjoying it, because the thing is with my activism is I'm used to trying to bring to public awareness the problems, the huge problems that are going on in Watchtower, and I can't stress this enough. Often I'm accused by apologists for Watchtower that I'm exaggerating how big the problem is with child abuse. Mm-hmm. The truth is I can't report everything I hear, because sometimes it's a victim who isn't ready yet to come forward with their story. The stuff I report on JW Survey is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
So when I see governmental organizations and royal commissions coming forward and really grilling the organization on their child abuse practices, honestly, it's like entertainment for me. It's like watching the new Star Wars. Completely riveted to what's happening, because this is something that really matters to me.
Well, and I think the thing that shocked me most when I was researching this story is the numbers. Like, we are talking about thousands of cases over 60 years, and that's just in Australia. Is that representative of most regions, you think? Do you think that, like, the problem's not any bigger there, it's just getting attention there now?
Well, that was one of the really eye-opening things to come out of this. There's been figures bandied around in 2002 that the number of pedophiles held on Watchtower records was 23,000. And then here we are in 2015, and the figure for Watchtower alone, going back to 1950, is 1,006. Not cases of pedophilia, but pedophiles. So if you have 1,006 accused pedophiles, goodness knows how many victims that means. Because usually if you have a pedophile, they will abuse more than one child. Now, if you know, someone's already tried extrapolating that figure and say it's probably not worth, I can't remember what exactly the figure was, but it's not hard to get to tens of thousands of pedophiles when you extrapolate that figure for Australia around the world, and you bear in mind that Jehovah's Witnesses are a worldwide organization,
right?
And Australia is just one of many countries in which Watchtower is present.
That's not even the most populous country. I mean,
right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a shocking story, and just following it, like, I knew that there was a problem, especially when you look at the way the structure of how the Watchtower, or how witness elders take care of these situations, you know, the two witness rule, which is a huge problem, and other things like this. I knew it was an issue, but I just am so overwhelmed, like, Catholicism is, you know, this is the worst thing in the world to say about this, but Catholicism sort of had the market cornered on pedophiles, if you will. But suddenly it's like, no, this is actually like a wider problem than I thought.
I'm going to get some emails on that one, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was
actually asked recently about Catholicism and how I would compare the problem with pedophilia with the in Jehovah's Witnesses with Roman Catholics, and whether I think that proportionally the problem is worse in Jehovah's Witnesses. I would actually argue that strongly that the problem is proportionally worse in Jehovah's Witnesses, because even though you have only 8 million Jehovah's Witnesses compared to, I think it's somewhere in the region of a billion Catholics.
Right.
The problem that you have with Jehovah's Witnesses is that anyone can be a pedophile. In Catholics, you have the situation is primarily limited to the priesthood. So, you know, you have priests in positions of trust who have abused their positions to molest children under their care. In Jehovah's Witnesses, it's the ordinary Jehovah's Witness who can be the pedophile. And when they come forward with the problem, or their victims come forward with the problem, the way that the protocols and the procedures are set up, you've mentioned the two witness rule, we're not going to take notice of this unless there was an extra witness to the crime, which never happens with pedophilia.
The very nature of the crime precludes
exactly
that.
Yeah,
exactly. So the way the procedures are set up makes it almost impossible to prosecute pedophilia. It has been described as a pedophile paradise. Mm-hmm. And there have been this one of the things that's brought out in the Royal Commission is that there have been limited changes, but the changes don't go nearly far enough. One of the changes they've made is that nowadays, if the branch deems it necessary to label a pedophile as a known pedophile, the elders can notify the parents in the congregation that this person is a pedophile and that they shouldn't let their children go near him. But still you have this gaping problem of the fact that elders aren't given the power to go straight to the police when parents or children come to them with accusations of pedophilia. And all it takes is a single letter from Watchtower to all of their elders. And believe me, I've seen hundreds of these letters. They get produced, let me think, they get produced about 10 times a month, elders from Watchtower to all of the bodies of elders, mostly on very trivial matters like how they should run their car park or what they should do with their literature desk, or how they should collect donations. Very trivial matters. All they need to do is release one letter that says, if you're an elder and you hear of an allegation of child abuse, call the police. That's all they need to do. And for some reason, they absolutely refuse to send that letter.
Right.
So to go back to the comparison between Catholicism and Jehovah's Witnesses again, I think of Catholicism and it being more of a hierarchical kind of issue because it's with the priest. Because it's so systemic with Jehovah's Witnesses, do you think that the church itself will ever fundamentally change and start reporting this sort of stuff to the police? Or do you think it will have to take people just leaving the church?
That's a very good question. Arguably, the time for them to be reactive in changing their policies has already been and gone. You had the Candace Conti case in June 2012, where Watchtower was on the wrong end of a $28 million judgment for their neglect with regards to child abuse. Since then, you've had the 2014 Jose Lopez case, where they were on the wrong end of a $13.5 million judgment. You also had a 2015 High Court case in the UK where they were on the wrong end of a £200,000 judgment with regards to failings with child abuse. You would think that they would already that the penny would already have dropped,
mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. But with the governing body, you have seven individuals who believe that they are spokespersons of Jehovah God, the supreme ruler of the universe. And that tends to flavor things slightly because they can think, well, the secular world is wrong and we're right. If it says this in the Bible and we understand it to mean what the Bible says, then the secular world is wrong and we're right. And even if they persecute us for holding to what the Bible says, we're going to stick to it. So it's a very complicated dynamic when you start realizing the fact that we're dealing with deluded people who are driven by religious agendas.
Mm-hmm.
So downstairs from here, I have a collection of books with green ink, which are known among collectors of these sorts of things as the green ink books of Scientology, where it's basically just a huge pile of memos that L. Ron Hubbard wrote while he was at St. Hill. And it's just like you said, there's a 5-page memo about how to properly run the parking lot. There's a 7-page memo about you know, how to starch the sheets and stuff like that. It's all the minutia. It's of running things. It's things he likes. It's things he doesn't like. And I can't imagine that if something were like this were happening in Scientology, he would have wrote something. It might not have been what we want, but there would have been some textual evidence. The guy couldn't hide anything. What do you think stays the hand of these people who, with a letter, could potentially make this problem go away?
Well, the amazing thing about L. Ron Hubbard, I have looked into Scientology. You know, I've read Lawrence Wright's fabulous book, which inspired the documentary, Going Clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite evident when you read about L. Ron Hubbard that here is a very disturbed individual with a spectrum of psychological issues that need to be addressed. But given the opportunity to start a cult and to, as you say, deal with these minutiae, he will, you know, create an entire hierarchy which deals with the small things but none of the big things. And with the leaders of Watchtower, once you get past the stage where you believe that you are God's representative on Earth, nothing else really matters as far as you're concerned. You're surrounded by people as Toni Morris, as Gerrit Loesch, as Steve Lett, as Jeffrey Jackson are in Brooklyn. You're surrounded by people on a 24/7 basis who are telling you that you're wonderful, who are telling you that everything you say, do, or write is wonderfully meaningful and powerful and profound. Everything that comes externally, everything that comes from the courts or from the media, you know, once you've bought into your own delusions of grandeur, everything else is just purely satanic and coming from Satan,
mm-hmm.
and possibly an instigator of Armageddon. So I think that when you look at Watchtower, and even when you look at Scientology, I mean, Scientology isn't really based on Bible dogma.
Right.
But you have the same issue of religious leaders who are devoid of any entertainment of critical thinking, who are just given a free rein on indulging their private fantasies. And you see it with Scientology, you see it with Jehovah's Witnesses, you see it with the Mormons, you see it with the Exclusive Brethren, you see it with the Westboro Baptist Church, and you see it with ISIS. ISIS being at the upper end of the scale in terms of harm.
So if there's anybody, if there's somebody hearing this who would like to get more information, and perhaps, we always ask this question on the air, but it's a little bit different in this case because people who might be wanting this information might be in a position where they could be in some actual danger. If people want to contact you, what's the best process for them to do so?
And well, the problem I have is that I'm only one man, and I'm already kind of at the absolute limit of what I can do in terms of activism. But
I understand.
I do obviously have my website, and there is a contact email address on there. Mm-hmm. If you're an ex Jehovah's Witness or you're a current Jehovah's Witness in need of help, there is the XJW Reddit community. Obviously, if you're familiar with Reddit, just look for the XJW subreddit. And I'm sure if you posted something on there, you would immediately receive some kind of acknowledgement. And also, if you're on Facebook, there's a fantastic XJW community on Facebook. I can particularly recommend XJW Recovery Group 3, which is run by a friend of mine, Ruben Ortiz. And they have a very well moderated page I forget what the precise number is, but it's somewhere in the region of 5,000 members, and it's very well moderated, and you'll receive a lot of help there.
Lloyd Evans is a former Jehovah's Witness elder. He's a writer and activist against the Watchtower Society, the organizational hierarchy behind the Jehovah's Witnesses. He's on YouTube as John Cedars, and he assists with the XJW Reddit community, and he runs jwsurvey.org. He joined us today from Belgium. Thank you very much for your time. This was really incredibly informative.
An absolute pleasure. Please keep up the very important work.
Thank you. Got to do some things by hand here that I usually have automated. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to catch up on some current events and maybe some interaction with the listeners, I should hope.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And sadly, reaching to the end of the hour, but we do have a couple of announcements. On Sunday, September 23rd, Ask an Atheist presents Shelley Siegel at the Swiss Restaurant and Pub in Tacoma. The Australian singer-songwriter returns to the Pacific Northwest on the heels of her May 2015 release of her latest EP? Of her latest Associated Press, Strange Feeling. This is an all-ages show. Yes, actually really an all-ages show. Check Humanists of Washington Secular South Sound meetup page or the Ask an Atheist Facebook event for more info. And I promise you it'll be a lot less political this time. I mean, like last time. At the end of the... Wow, okay. Ask an Atheist will be appearing at the Skept Dakota Conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota on September 29th. Meet up with us attendees and speakers on Friday night Is it September 29th? I think I got it.
That's August 29th.
I think somebody gave, somebody slipped me. Ask an Atheist will be appearing at the Skeptikota Conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota on September 29th. Meet with us.
You did it again.
August 29th. Sorry, it's written there. August 29th. Meet up with us attendees and speakers on Friday night. Attend the conference Saturday and see a live show of us. See us in person doing things, looking horrible. It'll be great.
So August 29th, 2009.
Yeah, it's that kind of convention. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. This has been a fun episode.
Yes! Let me play the song of my people.
I'd like to thank Roz. I'd like to thank Dave. My name is Sam. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. Go to our Twitter at askanatheistwa, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. We have a Facebook. I think we also accept message by carrier pigeon.
Moleman.
Yeah. deliver by Moleman. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic. You'll see me next week. I'll see you in about 5 minutes. Hallucinations, I go real far, I don't care.